With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello, welcome to the afternoon here on AusBiz Live from our Barangaroo studios. You've tuned in to The Call, 10 stocks picked by you. I put them to two experts. We do it all in an hour on this Thursday, the 4th of August. Our expert panel today, Mark Gardner from Macro Capital. Mark, good to see you.
Good afternoon.
Henry Jennings from Marcus today. Afternoon to you. ASX 200 back at 7,000. Are the bulls back?
Hi, guys. Well, the bulls are definitely back, at least for the short term. I've always kind of thought that we wouldn't have the V-shaped recovery. We'd have a more of a W-shape kind of bouncing along the bottom. We've bounced, nearly 10%, I guess, from our lows back in mid-June. Tax loss selling taking precedence there. So it's been a pretty good performance. Technology doing very well. Results season in the US driving things higher. And I guess somewhat of a pivot from central banks as well, with those 10-year rates coming off, all helping the situation. How much gas is left in the tank, I'm not so sure. We've got our own reporting season coming up. So I think more important than the level of the index is actually going now down to the company level in August as we go through the results season.
Mark Gardner?
Yeah, pretty similar view to Henry there, really. 50% retracements around 70.33. So that was probably a secondary point we were targeting. We're certainly cleaning up the tail at the moment. We held clients back from selling at those lows. Now having the opposite problem, trying to pry it out of their hands, but trying to give them a little bit of perspective in terms of...
So what are you saying? You're saying if you've got any crap in your portfolio, now's the time to get rid of it with the bounce and just clean it up, because
we've had some.
We could have another leg down.
Basically. So, and look, I think it's going to be about 38.2 Fibonacci retracement in the Nasdaq and slightly higher in the S&P as well. So, they are historically levels where it does tend to hover around for a couple of weeks, and then if it's going to take another downside move, it'll sort of turn down. So, essentially, obviously, a little bit tricky with the Australian reporting season. But I sort of said on the close yesterday, for those clients, we're sort of trusting in our picks, our reporting season picks.
Yeah.
Cleaning up anything that, some of those growth names that were really downtrodden around about that mid-June, some of them have recovered 50 to 100%.
So those that got hit with the tax loss selling. Now bounce back up, and if you didn't do it back then.
Yeah, look, I mean, you've ridden things like Ordinate down to $5.20. It's now back at $10. Liontown was at 85 cents, now at $1.40. You can probably switch, at least a portion minimum, if not all of those positions, into probably safer earnings seasons plays or more value picks. And essentially, for those who actually are concerned that we're going to see it turn down again, we're sort of buying a short, instead of trimming the positions that we like for earnings season, we're actually putting on a short ETF hedge instead and trusting in our picks. So, because there will be, as we've seen, a lot of those consumer discretionary, the analysts got it completely wrong in the US, and I would expect that it'll be the same case here. So. And unfortunately, they do report towards the end of the month, or some of them even actually early September. So that's a long time to ride that risk. So basically just, really just trying to shore up those portfolios.
Henry, is that a strategy you're looking at?
Well, I guess reporting season is always a bit of a landmine season. It's always the danger that you're going to step on something nasty. I guess, continuous disclosure has taken some of the sting out of the tail of that. But we do continue to see, sell now, reason later kind of reactions to a lot of these announcements. But we have, for small caps and resource stocks, which is where I tend to play a lot of the time, You know, we've had quarterly results come out in July, so that is, you know, that takes a lot of the risk out of the situation. Those quarterly production numbers, those quarterly sales updates, etc. We've also seen, you know, retail sales in Australia have held up remarkably well, as they have in the US. So I think, you know, some of the rumours of the death of retail and discretionary spending, we saw it with JB Hi-Fi, you know, I think they've been greatly exaggerated to some extent. There's still a lot of money out there, still a lot of money being spent in shops and online. We saw that yesterday. What will be the focus, I guess, of reporting season, of course, as always, will be the outlook, because for a lot of companies, you know, they're reporting results up till the end of June, and things were still relatively okay up till the end of June in lots of ways. We hadn't seen the rate rises really take effect, and it does take a while for those rate rises to start to really push into consumer spending. You know, mortgages go up slowly. You know, we've seen the RBA move month on month, but it does take a little while for that effect to come in. So it's all about the outlook, I think, is the key to it.
Yep, certainly not a general rule of thumb at the moment, is it? You've got to be very selective. Let's take a look at the stocks in the first half hour. We're going to run through James Hardie, Bass Oil, Ramsay Health Care, Credit Corp, and Eagers. Stock of the day, I thought we'd take a look at the Centuria Industrial REIT, posting a profit this financial year, with funds from operations seeing a 22% boost, in line with upgraded guidance. Shareholders will receive an 18.2 cents a share dividend. The REIT's occupancy rate is sitting just shy of 99%, with an average WALE, that's weighted long-term leases, of 8 years. Centuria was anticipating like-for-like income growth in FY23, thanks to strong market conditions. Seeing modest gains this morning, it was down early on the announcement. Back up now. Henry, what do you think of the Centuria Industrial REIT?
Koshy, well, as you know, there's probably a little bit dull for my investment risk appetite, the whole REIT sector, and I don't really look at it too often. It's a very specialist sector. This is Australia's largest domestic pure play industrial real estate investment trust. We used to call them property trusts, and there were fund managers that basically their whole careers were switching between one to the other to just get that extra little bit of performance. This is a pretty solid company, to say the least. I mean, it's a market leader, industrial property, 99%, let's face it, 98.8% of occupancy is pretty impressive. Don't seem to have been affected too much in the economic downturn. The problem that REITs have is as interest rates go up, that does tend to affect the cost that they borrow at. This is only 33% geared, so it's relatively lightly geared. But also the question is with property revaluations, because a lot of the growth in REITs is from property revaluations. Now, we're talking about house prices falling 10, 15, 20%. Now, I know that industrial property is somewhat different, but you would imagine that it's still going to come under a little bit of pressure with higher rates. So it's a hold, you know, 6% yield, not fully franked, but it's guiding, etc., to 17 cents distribution for FY23. It's got great high quality assets. It ticks lots of boxes. It's just a bit dull, to be honest, Koshy. I'm surprised you picked this one for me, actually. Well, we usually go for something a little more racier,
a bit sexier.
Solid, strong, hold, you know, you know, but it's strong market rental growth, etc. Great occupancy, great management. It's just.
But portfolios have a foundation of strong, sort of boring.
Yeah, we can't be 20% brain chip or something like that, you know. So,
in fact, Mark, on the 20th, the reason I picked it, Henry, is because on the 21st of July, Mark was on with David Lane from Ords. Both of them said it is the biggest and the best of the industrial REITs. Was trading at that time at 10-15% discount, and both had it as a buy. So after it's reported,
go nowhere.
After it's reported, Mark, what do you think?
Yeah, look, it was up at 318 about 4 days ago. I think one of the Centuria office REITs reported poorly, so the others got hit in sympathy.
pull back quite a bit. I'd absolutely stand by the buy, even at 295 here. They've got so based on forecasts, the they're expecting there's going to be 3.5 million square meters of gross take up over the next sort of 4 or 5 years. There's only 1.3 million square meters available at the moment, right. So they're expecting demand to remain high. This thing normally trades on a 10% premium to NTA. NTA is $4.24. So,
right. And
where the share price is right now is where it was a year ago. So even with those, even if property comes back, they've in the last year they've had a 1.6% revaluation to the upside, which is it's definitely slowing. That's for sure. But I mean, the pullback in the property, in the industrial property prices, is largely priced in at probably and some.
Right.
So, you know, this one's a staple of for clients. Just, you know, very, very steady she goes, as Henry pointed out. You know, we have to have a little bit of boring in our portfolios.
So it's at Henry, it's a 30% discount to its NTA.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. So a buy.
Well, somebody's taking a view there, certainly, because it had a big fall. It may well recover to its NTA, yeah. But there's certainly, I guess, some question marks, I guess, about the value of those tangibles.
Yeah, it's very light gearing. Their mandate, I think, is tops out at 50%
yep.
gearing. They're only at 33.
Okay.
Their average weighted debt maturity is 4.5 years. So,
right. You
know, we're by that stage, according to some analysts, we might have a rate hike cycle and back down again. So who knows?
Okay. All right. Let's get into the stocks that you want us to take a look at. And Henry, I suppose this is too sexier. Ian wants a view on James Hardie, the big fibre cement building products giant, operations here in New Zealand, United States, throughout Asia, Europe, Canada. What do you think of James Hardie?
Well, this is certainly sexier than CIP, Koshy, that's for sure. This one is pretty much a function and a derivative of the US housing market. And we've seen big falls in James Hardie. It's getting to the price. It has bounced off the lows, let's face it. But it has fallen as the US housing market has slowed. Although there's not much signs of US house prices actually falling. So that is a positive. And I guess with the bounce in the US markets as well, that is also a positive, because it makes you feel a little bit better about the world. It's not massively expensive in terms of its PE. It's not a bad yield. It just does have that big, big US dollar exposure as well. There's a lot to like about this one, but it is a derivative of US housing. And if some of the pundits are correct in terms of that US economy really suffering, and we've seen mortgage rates, 30-year mortgage rates in the US, pretty much double in the last few months, that has got to hurt. Maybe people don't renovate to sell, and that's certainly part of it. For me, this one is a hold. I'd probably be looking at it to nibble away if it fell away again. It did have a bit of a bottom in June, as did so many things, as Mark and I were discussing earlier. But it's a weird one. It's I struggle sometimes with James Hardie because of ethical things with the whole let's go to Holland and re-domicile and avoid all the asbestos issues. So that kind of always sits in my mind. But it is a U.S. housing story, and if the U.S. economy does not, well, it is in recession, that's in theory. But if it does not get any worse in the US, this could continue to recover. But for me at the moment, it's a hold, I think.
Yeah. All right. For those Midnight Oil fans, this is the original Blue Sky Mine. What do you think of James Hardie?
Yeah, I'd be a hold at this stage as well. There's still enough uncertainty out there that you don't really need to be playing necessarily in this space. If you wanted a small amount of exposure, something like maybe Brickworks might be, it's a little bit more diversified with at least a little bit of that exposure there. They had some pretty decent results recently. But look, it is a good company for all the characteristics that Henry said before. Obviously, with the US dollar higher as well, that'll probably add to their, their profits in Aussie dollar terms, but I'd probably would like to see the next 6 months unfold. and see if you can potentially get it cheaper. But it's, you know, if we do end up having a you know, a prolonged recession, or, you know, and I think they've got a lot of projects in the US as well with fixed costs, and that they've signed on for contracts prior to this inflation as well. So that's going to eat into their margin. So yeah, at the moment, I'd just be a wait and see. If you think that, you know, this recession is going to be very shallow and we're going to kick back up again, yeah, you know, like I said, something like, I think, you know, Brickworks is a pretty decent option on, you know, as an alternative.
All right. Now, Liz Henry wants a view on Bass Oil, small company in your wheelhouse. Onshore oil production in Indonesia. Liz says, what's the upside? Is it worth a specky buy? Quote unquote from Liz.
Liz, I have to say, you know, it's a $9 million company. They're trying to.
Nine?
Sort of,
yeah.
Nine.
Nine,
yeah.
Not
it, 90.
Nine. Oh, you kind of wonder why they bother, to be quite frankly. You know, it's we've seen the oil price at 120, and this thing was a little higher. They did do a capital raise at 4.5 cents. They are trying to push into the Cooper Basin here rather than just rely on that Indonesian asset, because they're trying to push into the East Coast gas market and the shortage thereof to exploit that. Cooper Energy has actually got around 4 or 5% holding in this one. But the problem is, not only is it a $9 million company, you know, the news agents downstairs to my office is probably worth more than that. But the problem with this one is it doesn't trade very much. Again, you know, there's not a lot of interest in this one. Doesn't trade an awful lot. Even today, there's 63,000 shares traded, which sounds a lot, but it's 4 cents. You know, that's really not very impressive. So, you know, we've been through an oil boom to some extent. We're going through a gas boom, and it's still not really moving the dial. They have got an option that they, when they did the capital raise, they have got an option out there at 12 cents. That was a free attaching option. BASO is the stock code there. And sometimes companies really try and pump up the stock price to get them to 12 cents over a period of time so they can get that extra money in. But it's only going to raise 600 grand, you know, so it's,
right. Okay.
It's hardly worth getting out of bed for. So not for me. Liquidity too small. And I play in the small spaces, but this one is even too small for me. If you're going to play the oil and gas sector, there's probably better things to play, I have to say.
Okay.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Yeah, 9 million market cap, super thin. Is 100 different things you could do with your money better than this.
Their listing fees must be huge compared with the size of the business.
You've got to question why they're listed. Particularly, they've been listed for quite a while as well. So, you know, it... net profit has been declining, revenues have been declining in a market where the oil prices rallied considerably. So, you just do not need to be there. You will end up paying a premium to get in and probably a premium to get out because it's so thin. It's just definitely not.
All right, let's go something slightly bigger, more traditional. Ramsay Health Care, Mark, the big global healthcare company, 221 hospitals, 14-day surgeries, Australia, UK, France, Indonesia, Malaysia, Italy. Employs 77,000 staff. It's huge, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Obviously, this one under takeover offer, which I think the initial bid was $88. I think it got to $84. As per, you know, our normal routine, we got clients out of half, within a couple of days of that announcement, which is just a... generally a good tactic. It's drifted off now to $70 at the moment. I've got quite a few doctor clients. They who've dealt with, you know, primary healthcare and Ramsay and things. That they like them as operators generally. But I would, you know, there hasn't been a lot of news come out of this KKR bid.
It
has gone very quiet, which is why it's drifted off. They say that they're looking at pricing up the hospital, the actual assets, the property assets. which is why it's taking a little bit longer. But I would expect, you know, something of this size. There's been a lot of infrastructure buying from private equity over the last, yep, you know, 18 months. This is a non-cyclical, almost infrastructure, I suppose. So we've clients for a little bit of safety. Obviously, you know, we've had CSL rally back up to $300. Sonic's probably our preferred in this space, but probably got a margin of safety, given the healthcare sector's probably rallied around about to, you know, as a about 4 or 5%, which would basically, if the deal doesn't go through, they're probably around about fairly priced as it is. So, but obviously with an upside, with an upside if the deal goes through. So we, for really conservative clients, we allocated some capital there, thinking, you know, even if they bring the price down to say 82, you're still making, you know, 12 to 15%. And, you know, there's some safety in that, you know, if the market does turn back around.
So you do it as a buy?
Oh, yeah, I would at the moment. It's, but it does concern me that they haven't had that, no news is not usually great. But we generally like that, you know, the healthcare sector as it is. It hasn't really rallied anywhere near as much as the general market over the last couple of years. So, and I think something like CSL, you know, most people have got a lot of CSL as it is. Yeah. So, you know, it's another big, you know, big, large cap option there for you.
Henry?
Well, the Barbarians are in ICU at the moment rather than at the gate with this one, with KKR. I'm with Mark. I can't. There's a trade here. I'm scratching my head because the initial proposal, non-binding, highly conditional, etc., was $88. Now, they haven't actually walked away from this. They're still doing due diligence. And I think part of the problem, part of the problem with Ramsey, forget the bid, is a number that you mentioned in your introduction, 77,000 people. Now, the problem is those people are getting, one, they're hard to find, so it's hard to expand, and also those people are getting more expensive. Ramsey is very big in the UK and in France and in Europe. They made some big acquisitions there, and I think that's part of the problem why KKR are struggling to get their heads around really what it's worth. But you know what, if you're going to spend all that time putting an $88 bid on the table, you're not going to walk away that quickly, and that's what they've done. They haven't walked away yet. They haven't officially walked away. So they're still rumbling around in the background. The trade, the big deal that they were trying to do, and I think there was one big Aussie pension fund that was looking at this, was to sell the property portfolio. Maybe they could sell it to CIP, but sell the property portfolio. And then they would create a sort of a trust, a bit like Bunnings do.
Oh, yeah.
And then they would lease back the properties for the actual running of the hospitals and the healthcare businesses they have. So freeing up that, and I think that was there's quite a lot of money tied up in that property play. And there are a number of people that are looking at that. But the whole European thing does complicate matters. I think KKR will be back. But I suspect they will be back at a lower price. They will adjust the price, and then we'll see Ramsey say, well, that's too low, we're not going to play with you anymore. And then they'll try and talk them up, and maybe they will meet somewhere in the middle for some sort of deal. But at $70, $71, you kind of think the downside's a bit limited from here.
Yeah.
And it is a relatively safe-ish play, relatively safe-ish.
Okay.
What price would they be without the bid? Excuse me, probably $67, $68. And what price are KKR going to come back? 83, 84? Who knows? But for me, this one is probably a buy at the moment, I have to say. And I keep looking at it and I'm tempted, but it's probably a buy for me.
Okay. All right. And Barbarians of the Gate, as Henry talked about, great book and movie as well. Mark Bryan wants a view on Credit Corp, the big debt financing business has taken a bit of a hit, they reported the other day, and said there weren't enough loan books around for them to go. Big financial institutions have their loan book, sell it to Credit Corp for cash up front, cents in the dollar, and Credit Corp get the debts in and keep it.
Which is, fairly different view to what the analysts are saying about household finances. Like, these guys can't even find distressed debt.
Didn't they say one of the reasons they're finding can't find distressed debt is because everyone's paying off their credit card?
Yeah. So, look, my only thing with this one is I don't necessarily mind the company, but obviously we're potentially in a turn of cycle here. Australia's had one fairly shallow recession in 30 or in 40 years. So you're really trusting in management to be able to execute, because they're going to have to pivot their business model a little bit if we do start to see higher distressed debt.
That's good for them.
But it does increase their addressable market.
Yeah.
So it will come down to selection for them, their ability, because realistically, the default rate in Australia has been below 0.5% forever. So they haven't really been tested in terms of their internal processes as to whether, and the credit rules as well. Obviously, you don't pay off a small bill that goes on your credit rating in Australia. Your credit scores with all the companies now, pooling their data, and has a pretty big effect on you. So it'll be their ability to be able to select the debt properly. So for me, it's probably a little bit of a wait and see to see.
Right.
But if you trust in management, with more distressed debt, there will be a much larger addressable market. But as it stands at the moment, probably, it doesn't matter. It doesn't really move a hell of a lot either. So, except for the other day, forward PE is the same as the trailing PE and the sector PE. The dividend's not great, so probably not no reason to be there just as it stands at the moment. So I'd just have it on the watch list.
Okay. Henry, what do you think of Credit Corp? They've gone into the US as well, haven't they? Oh, are you on mute?
Sorry. I'm not sure when Mark says they don't move a lot. They've gone from $35 to $18 in the last year. So that's a fair old move. That's certainly more exciting than SIP, CIP rather. So that is a fair old copying it move. What's been interesting, I guess, is the stock price has been on a bit of a slide. You can see there it has bounced from that $18.5 level back up to $23. It has been on a bit of a slide, even though we've had so much talk about recession.
Yeah.
And these guys, as you say, they buy these purchase debt ledgers, especially in the US. They've got to find them. They've got to find, I guess it's kind of a weird situation. You've got to find good quality debtors.
Yep.
You've got to find guys that can pay but won't pay, or can pay at the end of the day and will pay, or at least will do a deal rather than people that have got no money and just going to walk away. And that, of course, is a far more prevalent thing in the US, which has probably hurt them a little bit. The other thing that's hurt them, of course, is the fact that you've got 3.5% unemployment in the US, 3.8% unemployment here.
Yep.
And that does hurt. People are servicing their debts, and that has hurt them as well. Interestingly, Macquarie still has an outperform on this one, but slashed its price target. This is a cracker. I love these when they do this. They slashed their price target from $37.80 to $24.90, basically because I think the $37.80 just looked too stupid for words. So they had to get it more in line with where the price is, and they put an outperform back on kept it on the stock because of the potential for one-off, as they call them, PDL, which is the purchase debt ledger acquisitions. It should be a bit of a business that does okay when we see a recession, or we see people struggling with their mortgages, struggling to pay their bills, but that could take a little while to come through. And I think the downgrade from management recently is enough to put it maybe on the watch list, but not enough to put it on a buy list. For me, it's probably still, we've got a few holds today, more than a Greco-Roman wrestling match at the Commonwealth Games. But I think, this is a hold at the moment. And let's see how, as Mark rightly says, let's see how management does in regaining our trust, because it has halved in the last year.
Okay. Right,
back to the not moving outside of earnings season, it doesn't. And then it moves, and then it will have a severe move, and then it kind of ranges. So.
Sure.
But just to fill in some context there.
Okay. Henry Murray wants a view on Eagers, Australia's oldest automotive retail group. I didn't realise it started in 1913, about 200 new car dealerships throughout Australia and New Zealand. Nick Politis, the car king, has been upping his stake in Eagers over the last couple of weeks.
This one's done very, very well. It's been a great performer, and I don't see any reason why it shouldn't continue to be a great performer. Of course, it got sold down in the June mayhem that you can see there from the chart, bottomed mid-June, as did lots and lots of things. Since then, we've had a bit of a market update as well from these guys, and it seems that our appetite for new cars is insatiable, and the supply for new cars is not insatiable. I'm not sure what the opposite of that is, but it's constrained, shall we say. So getting hold of your new Toyota Land Cruiser, etc., is quite hard work. But these guys are doing pretty well out of it. It's trading on an 11 times 1 year forward PE, so it's not exactly expensive, and that's a long way from its 5 year average. So I think there's more gas in the Hilux tank in this one as people do upgrade their cars. It has been a COVID winner to some extent, and I think it's going to continue to do so in that space, especially once we're all airline travel tripped out. We're going to go back to car trips again, and I suspect the new family car is high on the agenda, especially as we go towards electric vehicles as well. So I like this one. It's even though it's bounced, I think there's more gas in the tank. It would be a buy, but it was obviously a much better buy in June.
Mark.
Yeah, I don't mind the business at all. There's, it's a little bit confused. There's very different opinions on this from many analysts. Obviously, they're involved in servicing and things as well. So some people are saying, the rise of electric vehicles may hinder that because there's not as much servicing costs, etc.
Yeah,
that's a long way off. As it stands, they've got some pretty good prime real estate that a lot of these car yards are on as well. They've had a really nice bounce out of those COVID lows. We've had this on previously. I think it was a reporting season play for us last year, I think last March, and we've been out. I haven't looked at it a great deal since. Obviously, it has moved around. Those June lows around $9 were obviously pretty extreme. I'd just be watching at the moment, but the semiconductor shortage is sort of starting to ease. There's a lot of factors that may bring some buoyancy.
Nick Politis upping his stake is a good sign for it, isn't it?
He's a fairly shrewd operator, so I would say that's and particularly someone who's got a very good track record within the industry. I think there's that's not insider buying, but
it's
people in the know, who are very familiar with the industry. So apart from the Roosters, I'm very happy with his track record. But at these prices, it's had a pretty sharp bounce. At these prices, I'd definitely be holding it. And I'm just a little bit wary of where the index is bounce back to overall, and a little bit cautious for the next month or 2 months. So maybe try and pick this up a little bit lower, but definitely a hold. I like the company.
Okay. So. All right. Let's recap the first five stocks and our stock of the day, which was Centura Industrial REIT, a hold from Henry, a buy from Mark. James Hardy, a hold from both. Mark in that sector prefers Brickworks. Bass Oil, too small, a no from both. Ramsay Healthcare, a buy from both. Credit Corp, hold and watch from Henry, a no from Mark. And Eagers, a buy from Henry, and a hold and a watch from Mark. Here on the call, we've been tracking the calls. High Conviction Fantasy Fund is picked by our investment committee. Latest episode of the committee meeting is up live on the platform, ausbiz.com. Let's check a portfolio update. So heading into August, Ordinate was removed. the investment committee sort of agreeing with comments, Mark, a bit earlier, take your profits and run on that. And Oz Minerals was added. The committee also upped its the size of its Woodside holding as well. Henry Jennings, of course, part of the investment committee. We'll update you on the portfolio, how it's travelling a bit later in the week. Keep sending your requests through here to the call, because that's the first filter to get up.
At CMC, we've been in the game for a while, and although a lot of things have changed, our mentality hasn't. We aim to give experienced traders the best trading experience, like our expert platform with its second-to-none trading tools, plus our pricing is completely transparent. That's why people who've been trading for a long time stay with us for a long time. So if you're serious about trading, switch to the market leader trusted for over 30 years. Trade CFDs your way at cmcmarkets.com. You don't own underlying assets. Consider relevant PDS and TMD or information memorandum for CMC Pro accounts at our website.
To the investment committee. This half hour, catching up, we'll be covering Pilbara Minerals, Capital Health, Redbubble, Block, and also Stockland. Henry Jennings, Richie wants a view on Pilbara Minerals, the lithium miner.
Hi, Richie. Anyone that follows my stuff in the newsletter will know that I am a Pilbara fan. Yes. I am a lithium fan. These stocks have bounced extraordinarily well off that June low, almost like tech stocks to some extent. The great attraction of Pilbara Minerals is that it is producing now. It is selling that wonderful white powder, the lithium powder, now. And that is a big plus. There's lots of promises about tomorrow and 24, 25, 26, and there's lots of guys out there. But the truth is that there is a lack of supply of a critical metal that is going into electric vehicles for the next 2 years. And Pilbara is tapping into that. They've just completed their eighth auction, the BMX Bandit auction, which is the, they have an auction for the kind of the stuff that they have left over from their long-term contracts. And again, another really impressive price they got for that. That's they got a $7,012 dry metric ton for spot spodumene. That is pretty good. I think that was around 3 to 6% higher than the last auction as well. So that is a pretty impressive result. And as Oscar Wilde once said, you know, the rumours, it wasn't actually Oscar Wilde, it was Mark Twain, but the rumours of the death of lithium has greatly been exaggerated. And these guys have had some production problems. They have had issues getting staff, as have lots of Western Australian companies as well. But that is, I guess, going to be resolved over time as COVID hopefully becomes a dim and distant memory. So I think this one is still a very, very solid buy. And if you look at where the spot price is for lithium and the prices they're getting in the BMX auctions, which is, I guess, a very real-time guide to the demand, they had 67 bids for that spot spodumene that they were selling. 67 bids, that's pretty strong demand. And you put the sort of the spot price in at the moment, you will get a valuation way, way, way above where they are now. And of course, that's not something that people can rely on because things change. But these guys are producing. I like this one. It's kind of a core lithium stock to own.
Yep. And the BMX Henry was talking about has got nothing to do with the bandits, but stands for Battery Gibbon, Material Exchange, which is the platform that they sell them on. But yeah, it is impressive, Mark.
Yeah, no, that auction platform is genius, really, and gives a lot of transparency where, you know, the lithium stocks really got hit on a Goldman Sachs report, but you know, you go in and you get almost reading the a couple of the updates recently. The CEO almost sounded quite irritated at the that speculation, but and that the amount of bidders for that is up by 50% from the last auction, and then which was up from the previous. So the demand is definitely not drying up at all. I couldn't agree more with Henry. This stock is the most overweight stock I have across my clients.
Even at these levels, it's had the bounce.
It's absolutely. This is really only recovered what it got from from some speculative report that.
Is this the pick of the lithiums?
It is for me at the moment. Look, I didn't mind having some Liontown and things on, obviously, but the uncertainty. I've sort of switched back out of Liontown on this bounce
to get into more certain, you know, a little bit more certainty. But Alcombe's pretty decent as well. They're probably a little bit further ahead than Pilbara. But, you know, they're 90% margins. Even if they've got to go and chase staff, it's not going to hurt them too badly. Like, their margins are so fat that it really doesn't... it's really, you know, rising prices is not really going to affect them a hell of a lot. I think their capacity increased by 57-odd% last quarterly update. The shipment's up 118%. And as Henry, you know, pointed out, they're producing now. They're taking advantage of as much as they possibly can. I don't think we'll see a dividend necessarily from these guys anytime soon, because I think they'll be focusing on trying to expand production as much as they possibly can. But definitely a buy for me.
So Pilbara and Alcombe in this space for you. Pilbara, Alcombe for you, Henry, or both?
Well, that's a bit like the little guy from El Paso, isn't it? The taco kid. Why can't we have both?
I agree. Absolutely.
Yes, okay. You know, all right. Good answer.
There's a bunch of other ones as well. I think if you concentrate on the ones that are actually benefiting from the high prices at the moment rather than the high prices promised tomorrow, I think that's where my money is focused. Core Lithium, I own that one. PA, that one's coming on stream in the fourth quarter of this year. And ramping up production next year. So that one's all been quite good as well.
All right. Mark Yaz wants a view on Capital Health Group, a Victorian medical diagnostics company. Yaz says, would you see this as a long-term hold?
I didn't know a lot about this one. Obviously, it's fallen away, you know, with the rest of the market in sort of recent times. It hasn't got a massive market cap. It's pretty middle of the road, really, in terms of PE, trailing PE, dividend, forward PE, and against the sort of sector. I'd probably rather go with the bigger players at this stage, just with a little bit more of a level of certainty. But I didn't know a hell of a lot about it because it just obviously we're a little bit more focused on the larger caps.
Mainly regional Victorian and Melbourne.
I mean, could be a potential takeover target at some stage, I suppose. But it's not something that, you know, the dividend yield's sort of 3.6. It is difficult to get yield in the healthcare sector, but we probably prefer something like, you know, Monash IVF, which is a good, if you're going to go in that smaller end of the healthcare sector, because it's got a higher yield. Yield and probably a little bit more of an expansion plan, and they made a couple of sort of clever acquisitions in the COVID lows. So, but yeah, it's just a pass for me, I think, generally. Okay. It does nothing really massively excites me about it. So,
Henry, does it excite you?
Not in the same way that Pilbara does, I have to say, David. Capital Health, I guess, you know, the problem for these guys, you look at the charts, think, oh, that's a bit of a buy. But then you look at where its sort of high point is, it's 34 cents, it's 28 cents now. You're really going to stuff around for that kind of, I don't know. It's, for me, at the moment, it is more of a buy than anything else. Only because we are seeing elective surgery coming back, diagnostic testing obviously coming back. That's the elective surgery. If you're going to be allowed to do elective surgery, then you're going to have to go to get your CAT scans, all your other scans, etc., which is where these guys are placed. But equally, again, it's you know, we're constantly reminded every day in the media about the shortages of staff everywhere, especially in the healthcare sector. You know, nurses quitting, can't put up with things, and not, the ones that are hanging around, the cost increase from higher salaries and remuneration, etc., that does weigh on them. So I you know, there's certainly some headwinds, and if we do see the economy come under a little bit of pressure, are we going to see people rushing out and getting expensive scans and then going for expensive elective surgery, which, you know, a lot of private health insurance does not cover all of it, and it still mounts up those costs. So it's more a buy than anything else, but it's going to be, a long road back to rosy cheeks for this one. But, yeah, it's I'm going to say it's a buy, David, only because it's fallen a long way and hasn't recovered, and we are seeing a return to elective surgery. But just be a little bit careful about the economy. If it falls away and we do see higher costs in the sector, that will hurt.
All right. I think you talked yourself into it just in that answer.
I did. You're right. I did. I actually started off as a buy in my mind, and then I talked myself out of it. Then I talked myself back into it.
Yeah, I love the way that you think. All right, Matt wants a view, Henry, on Redbubble, the global online marketplace for artists and sort of artists and people to do their T-shirts and face masks and homewares and artwork. Matt says, what's your view on it after the uptick following the Etsy's good report? And they've come out of court. Hell's Angels took them to court, which is, you know, want to get offside.
You don't want to mess with those boys.
for using, someone using their logo to print stuff.
It'd be one of the first times they've been the plaintiff, not the defendant,
yeah,
I suppose.
Right. Henry, what do you think of Redbubble?
Well, you don't want to make an enemy of the Hell's Angels, do you? I would say that you probably didn't want to go to court against them.
That would be worse than ASIC. Yeah.
It would be. ASIC don't hit you with a pool cue. Well, generally they don't. Redbubble, I guess they did very well during COVID, mainly because they made, they put artists' work on face masks, and they did huge amounts of business in that. And there were people stuck at home, you know, in their Jimmy Jams, buying cool and trendy T-shirts and buying these cool and trendy masks for when they were finally allowed out. They have had a little bit of a bubble up, if you like, on the back of that Etsy result, as you say. It's kind of, you know, it's one of those very volatile tech stocks, let's face it. And we have seen the NASDAQ rally, 15% off its lows. We've seen our tech sector rally quite nicely as well. This one hasn't really joined in too much as yet, but it's one of those go-to, let's chuck some money at the tech sector. Oh, what should I buy? Oh, Redbubble, Temple & Webster. You know, 360. You look through. There's a whole list of past miscreants that you can lob money at. For me, at the moment, I think this is a hold. You know, rising interest rates. We've got squashed margins to some extent. The whole mask thing's over a little bit. I think things are slowing. The business model's a bit interesting in some respects as well. It does, you know, allow artists to put their stuff on face masks and T-shirts, etc., which is great, but I'm just not convinced that it's a long term.
Okay,
it's got enough moats to make it worthwhile. Not for me.
Mark, the fans of it say it's got a lot of money in the bank and is a natural acquisition for Etsy.
Well, look, it's not really a space I've been paying a lot of attention to. You know, it sort of, in my mind, it kind of had its time, obviously, with the face mask, etc. I've used it. It's a great concept, don't get me wrong. Their costs have gone up quite a bit as well. I think obviously with the rise in the share price and they're making great money, they've gone and hired a whole heap of staff, which may or may not have been, you know, absolutely necessary. In the retail space, I think there's better options at the moment, particularly how downtrodden that sort of sector has been. But as Henry says, for probably more of a trading stock at these prices at the moment. It's not
for you.
Not really for us,
okay.
No.
All right. Mark Harold wants a view on Block. Harold says, thoughts on Block, considering all the Zip/Sezzle dramas, of course. Block is the used to be Square, bought Afterpay, merged the two together, renamed the company Block.
Yeah, there's the US operation has a lot of different moving parts. A lot of people are even using their product now as their bank account in a way. There's a lot of crossovers. It's a super competitive space, particularly the buy now, pay later part. Everyone's got it now. It's not a space we've necessarily been focusing on. It's, for us, it's probably a little bit more of a trading stock. We sold our Afterpay on the takeover, as it was. We thought, enough was enough.
and we've been actively getting, we were actively getting people out of Zip. There's only the true believers with that left on amongst the macro clients. So, I just don't need the stress at the moment, considering, you know, it was only 7 weeks ago where, you know, the world was ending. And this thing was, you know, would have been down around the $84 mark. So, and a lot of clients have said, oh, well, if I dollar average there, but I mean, they probably started dollar averaging much higher. So, it's not something we're generally focused on. It's more of a buoyant market stock, really. But yeah, it's we'd probably just be a pass and avoid for now.
Okay, Henry.
I mean, Block is very, very volatile. It's run, as Mark says, 50% from its lows. I think the whole buy now, pay later thing is a little bit of a sort of a diversion for Block. Being the Square thing, they're the guys that have the booking as well. You can, that small retailers and small businesses have the Square that they can do the point of sale charging, etc. And buy now, pay later integrates into that. Mm. The other thing that Block has, which some people may or may not know, is, of course, it has quite a big exposure to Bitcoin. And it's no coincidence that as Bitcoin has rallied off its lows and the whole crapto collapso has not happened, at least not in Bitcoin, then we have seen a Block rally as well. So frequently you'll see a move in Bitcoin or the digital currency space, and you will see a similar move in Block. The US consumer demand is holding up pretty well, and that's the big key to this one. And I noticed on CNBC this morning they were talking about a very large option. Sorry, I should have mentioned that. But a very large option trade that had been taken out on the back of Block's results, which are coming up very shortly, if not tonight, I think they are out. Okay. So we could have a big movement in Block, but it's certainly recovered really well. It's very much a US stock these days. Afterpay was the big push into the US for the Aussie company.
And look, Square was way much bigger than Afterpay, wasn't it?
Afterpay was an afterthought.
Yes.
You know, it really was an afterthought for them in terms of just the ability to tack on that buy now, pay later to their already, their point of sale and consumer offering that they were doing. And as Mark says, you know, it's almost like a bank account.
Yeah.
So that buy now, pay later fitted in really well. But Jack Dorsey has been very keen on the whole Bitcoin and digital currency situation. So it's no coincidence that this one has rallied, as has Bitcoin. The results tonight, all important. But you know what? It's going to be volatile. It's a great trading stock and a serious reflection of NASDAQ. And if we continue to see NASDAQ push ahead, you know, we will probably see Block push ahead. Okay. So, it's just too complicated for me. I'm not a US analyst.
Right.
It's listed here, but it is a US business. That's why. Okay.
You can do share trading and all sorts of things on the US version as well. So, it's a product to keep an eye on. But at this point in time, VIX is, we're at sort of 10-week lows in the VIX, but we're still above 20. Yeah. Like And you know, we've had some really big moves lately. So if you like it, you certainly need to be careful because this thing will whip around.
Okay. So. All right. And our final stock, Mark Tanya wants a view on Stockland, the big property organisation, diverse retail, office, everything.
Yeah, a fair bit of retail in there, which is not really something that we would, you know, we're not that keen on at all. I think it'll still be a while before we see them. You know, we've had the reopening, but we still haven't really seen the results of whether. Renters will basically, for those retail spaces, will still, you know, they've probably never asked the question to renegotiate their rents in the past, and maybe they're in the habits of that. That might bring margins down. It is fairly cheap. It yields pretty well. Forward PE's way below the sector PE, so it looks fairly cheap. It's just more so Charter Hall, Long WALE, REIT is probably, or CIP would be my two preferences in the space. Waypoint was, but it's rallied now. You probably wouldn't be buying it up here, but it. There's better options within the sector, but that retail. I'm still a little bit wait and see on the retail, but obviously, so you know, where the forward PE is sitting here at the moment, so is the market. So.
I definitely hold it if you've got it, but I think you've got better options within the within the REIT sector, because the industrial's just got that underlying tailwind of there, but just being a severe lack of actual available space. So if interest rates do go higher, that'll be the one that's going to fall the least. Whereas, you know, if interest rates go higher, if it's something with as much retail exposure as this has got, obviously the shops will close as well.
Yeah.
There'll be defaults and things. So, but it's a well-run business generally. So, yeah, it's a hold if you've got it.
Henry?
I'll make it simple. It's a hold. I guess it's in a bit of a sentiment hold at the moment because of the fact that it's got quite a lot of exposure to residential, and we all know the problems with that. It's kind of, you know, REITs in general, property trusts, were designed to be, you know, kind of dull and boring. It was designed to be a way that you could own an office building without having to buy the whole building. You could just buy a bit of it. It's got a pretty decent yield. It's not expensive, as Mark says. It does have that residential exposure, which I think is a bit of a handbrake on it at the moment as we're seeing rates rise, but we could see an improvement in the fourth quarter. There's a bit of project timing in there as well. It's hard to get excited about it, but equally it's hard to be Debbie Downer on it as well. So for me, it is a hold, but you know, they're in retirement living as well. There's a very it's a very diversified real estate investment trust, good yield, good management, but it has got that residential exposure, which is a bit of a handbrake. For me, it's a hold at the moment. If you've got it, no reason to sell it. If you're looking at REITs generally, there's probably sexier ones to play. Goodman Group is still the class act, I think, in the sector, and obviously has a lot of diversified exposure, especially towards logistics centres, and they don't build too many of those anymore. So, you know, it's got a bit of a monopoly position there. So I prefer Goodman Group, but this one, yeah, nothing wrong with it. Good yield, cheap.
Okay.
Yeah.
And if the REIT sector rallies, Goodman always outperforms really nicely. So, So if you're expecting a massive recovery in that REIT sector, I mean, Goodman's, it tends to really do very well to the upside. So, you know,
it's been a bit quiet the last few months.
It has. But it does move a lot more than the others within the sector. Okay. So in more buoyant conditions, we quite often will switch out of between CIP and Goodman's. And, you know, but Goodman's generally for us is a more buoyant market.
Good tip. All right, let's recap the final five stocks this half hour. Pilbara, a buy from both Henry and Mark. Capital Health, Henry talked himself into a buy on that one. Mark is a no. Redbubble, a hold from Henry, a no from Mark. Block, a no from both. And Stockland, a hold from both. Henry Jennings from Marcus Today. Good to see you, mate. Thank you kindly.
See you guys.
Mark Garner from Acro, always good to have you in Barangaroo Studios. If you'd like any stocks that are of interest to you for me to put to our expert panel, put them in an email to call@ausbiz.com.au or tweet us using the @AusbizTV handle. You can see all the stocks in the Call's fantasy portfolio at ausbiz.co/portfolio. Small caps coming up after this.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.